And I'm hoping to lead you to, you know, one discipline that we're going to walk away with today. We're not going to walk away with song. We're going to walk away with a really practical discipline. And hopefully if you've got a pen or you've got a note space in your phone, you'll take these down. And I'll come to that, but I'm just preempting it. I'm going to give you a takeaway today that really, it really just could affect your life. You see, James writes, as I said, to a church, to the followers of Jesus who are in the midst of trial. Many of them are on the run. In fact, James, when he begins this, he writes it and he says, from James, a servant of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes, and he's writing to his own people, to the Jews, to the 12 tribes who are scattered and scattering amongst the nations. And so James is sort of writing after them, trying to encourage them wherever they might find themselves. But in the midst of these trials, the first thing James says is what? Consider it all joy, or consider it pure joy when you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the trying of your faith produces perseverance, and that perseverance, or that pushing on and pushing through, will produce maturity so that you'll lack no good thing. It's this perseverance under trial. It's the not pulling back. It's the going on in which that work of the Spirit of God is completed in us, that we will be lacking nothing that we need for this journey of transformation. And so that, and when I was reading through it, I always like to look at word roots, and it's just sort of the way my mind works. I like words. So I'm looking at that word consider. And the word consider in its original form is taken from a Greek word that is not just to do with thinking. That word consider is actually a word that has to do with authority. That was fascinating to me. What James is saying is let this word, or let this, you know, this action have authority over you. Paul uses a similar word that for consider when he says, I consider it all loss for the sake of Christ. He says, this isn't just a random thought. This is a statement that I give authority over my life to. And this word really has this sense of rulership or lordship over. So when James says, consider it pure joy, he says, let this rule your heart, that it is pure joy, knowing that God is working my maturity through the perseverance of whatever it is that I'm facing. And when we can let that rule our thinking, we're not so quick to want to escape the tough situations we find ourselves in, because we know that God is working for our good in the midst of that. So it's not just thinking nice thoughts, it's allowing this truth to have authority over us and guide and guard the way that we think. And then James goes on and he says right after that, because he knows that we're going to struggle with that idea, he says this, and if you're lacking wisdom, or if you're not getting this, ask God, because he's going to give you his wisdom abundantly. Not nitpicking you, not finding fault with you. But when you ask him, don't just Don't just throw it in the mix and weigh it up against every other good idea. Listen to the wisdom of God. Act on it. Man, James here just gives us such a flow of thoughts, but such concise thoughts too. Look into it, and then he goes on to this, and he says, and look into his word and apply that word to your life. You know, it's easy to speak out in times of trial and disquiet, isn't it? Isn't it easy when we're in time of trial and disquiet to raise our voice, even at God, and go, why would you let this happen to me? Why would you let me go through this, God? Why would you let me experience that loss? Why would you let me experience that pain? Why would you let me experience that suffering? Why, God, wouldn't you deliver me from this illness? Why, God? And it's so easy to begin to raise our voice in disquiet. It's interesting, even that word, disquiet, gives that sense of noise. Doesn't it? It's not quiet. It's not at rest. It's noise. And often in noise, we begin to speak. It took me back to the book of Job. In the book of Job, man, there's a man who was considered to be righteous. And this series of events happens to him that really ruin everything that he would have considered good and of value. And his friends gather around him and sort of try to wrestle this out with him. And they're asking things like, Job, what have you done? Because obviously God doesn't allow this in the lives of righteous people. You know, you must have brought this on yourself somehow. And Job responds to this and he begins to speak out. And he begins to declare his own righteousness. And he begins to, you know, to sort of verbally wrestle with these things. And he begins to become defensive. And he speaks defensively. And he even comes to the place that he verges on accusation. And you see it as you read through it until you come to Job chapter 40. And that's when God just steps in and all the other people have tried their wisdom out and God steps in and he just speaks to Job. And in it's verse 1 and through verse 8, but I want you to just hear it. Because God has sort of just been silent and listened to all of this talking going on. And then the Lord said to Job, will the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? Let him who accuses God answer him. And then Job answered the Lord. After all of the things Job has said, Job answers the Lord like this. He says, I am unworthy. Oh, how can I possibly reply to you? And I put my hand over my own mouth. Job just realizes in this moment that when God steps in and goes, you want to accuse me? Then stand up and let's have a conversation. And Job suddenly goes, oh man, oh, I shouldn't have said anything. Another version says, I spoke of things I know nothing about. Oh, I was just shooting my mouth off. I was trying to justify myself. I was trying to make myself feel better. I was trying to work my way through this, but in the end, I was just shooting my mouth off. He says, I spoke once, but I have no answer. I spoke even twice, but I'll say no more. And then the Lord spoke to Job again out of the storm. Now, this must have been terrifying, these words. He says, brace yourself. That means something's coming. Brace yourself like a man, because I'm about to question you, and you will answer me. Would you discredit my justice? Would you condemn me to justify yourself? Listen to those words again. That is verse 8. God looks at Job and he says, would you discredit my justice? And would you condemn me to justify yourself? And this is what James begins to get the people to lean into. Because he says, in the midst of trial, when we're lacking wisdom, man, when we're trying to do all the stuff, there comes this series of verses there in James chapter 1, 19 through 21. And James basically says this, listen up, zip it up, and calm down. He says this, be quick to listen, be slow to speak, and be slow to become angry. And it's so easy in the midst of trial to shut our ears and to open our mouths and to get so upset. We begin to do what Job did and question and shake our fists and accuse. But we've missed the fact that God is allowing us and navigating us through even some very difficult times. That if we will persevere, we will see His hand. We will see His goodness. We will see what He was working, allowing to be worked in us through those circumstances. So James 1, 19 through 21, here you go. Listen up. Zip it. And calm down. And that's what I want to address really simply. I really do think that James starts here because there is a fact that you cannot speak and listen at the same time. We like to think we can. In fact, you may have been in arguments, you may have been in conversations sometime, and you're just going off at each other. I know it doesn't often happen in marriages, but if you're married here, just imagine. It's a crazy thing to imagine, I know, but just imagine that you're going at each other and then one of you in this conversation says, you're not listening to me. And what's the usual response? Yeah, there it is. Yes, I am. Well, actually, if you're talking while the other person is talking, I have news. Scientifically, you are not listening. I was doing some reading on as I was preparing this and found that it's actually a fact. You cannot do both. There's this area of the brain, and it's called Broca's area. And when they would, you know, they love doing all these brain studies, and this little part in the frontal lobe of the brain, when they put all these electrodes on and they do these analysis of what's actually happening in a brain when we're doing different things. This little spot here is what fires when we are speaking, but it is also what fires when we are taking in information. And you cannot do both at the same time. It's like trying to push out information and push in information down the same tube, and it just stops. It simply physically does not function. And so next time you have an argument and someone says, are you listening to me? You go, no, because I'm talking. Because that would really be the truth. It's impossible. The same part that uses this same part of the brain, Broca's area, is used for language production and language comprehension. I just think that's fascinating. Because when you're speaking, microseconds before you speak, that part of the brain is actually thinking about what it's going to say. That is processing what's going to come out here. And so it can't be processing what it's going to say at the same time it's processing what is being said. And it's funny, there was my wife and I, you know, we had a person who was part of our lives, still is, and I really love this person. But what I realized often is they are already processing what they're going to say, and often they would say something that had no relevance to what I had just said to them. No relevance whatsoever. They thought they knew where I was going to go, so they were already processing a response to that, and then I would say something, and this response would come back, and it'd be like, what? Are we in the same conversation here? So when James here says this, be quick to listen. The very next thing is actually going to be happening, because if we are really listening, we're not going to be speaking. You have got to stop your argument to actually listen. And this is why James writes that, I believe, in the context of God and His word to us, is you cannot keep your argument going if you are really listening for what God is speaking. So point one, choose to listen. Be quick to listen. The follow-on is true, then you will be slow to speak. So listen up, zip it up. How quickly do words come to you? Some people, words aren't necessarily their go-to. They're silent, they don't speak it out, but you know what? Often words don't end up here, they just stay there. And this part of the brain that's processing them, you can still not be listening because you are already thinking and it is already brewing anger, and you know that there are people who are the what? The silent, angry type. The silent, angry type. Doesn't mean that there are not words being formulated. There are words being formulated. They just haven't come out here. But the anger is just as destructive. For me, it's hard. Words come easy. I open my mouth to yawn and I find I'm talking. I am a verbal processor. It's all the time. You know, wear my heart on my sleeve, that's me. You're around me very long, you know what I'm thinking, you know what I'm wrestling with, you know what I'm feeling. I have to have trusted people in my life, but even then I have to go, look, I'm not saying this as a fact. I'm just processing, but just listen, just be my sounding board for a minute. I'm just wired a bit like that. But Proverbs 17 and 27:28. It's pretty challenging because it says this, the one who has knowledge uses words with restraint. Whoever has understanding is even-tempered, And even fools are thought wise if they keep silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues. Even the fool is thought wise if they stay silent, discerning if they hold their tongues. Another proverb says, where words are many, sin is not absent. And usually that's in the context of someone who's continually trying to justify themselves. When you have to say a lot to try and justify yourself, you usually got something hidden away. When I worked as a police chaplain, police officers on scene would just get people talking. Because they say the guilty person usually is the one talking the most. Eventually, people will condemn themselves. Just let them talk. Where words are many, sin is not absent. So what do we do? Here you go. Get your pen ready. Being slow to speak is when we begin to use words with restraint, to be wise in the way we speak. And so I want to give you this little formula here. Think before you speak. All right? Think before you speak. I'm going to give you five keys using these letters of the word think. This is what you need to write down, because this is what we're going to walk away with today. And I reckon this could be transformational to us. Listen. Be slow to speak and process what we are going to speak by thinking. Here's the thinking. First, T, is it true? But do not allow that to be your only guide. There are things that are said that are true that are not beneficial. You know that? There are things, and people say, well, I can say it because it's true. Yes, but it's horribly unkind. I once heard it said that a woman who is spoken to her, a woman who is spoken to about her age lives longer than the person who asked her. Isn't that an interesting fact? That women who are asked about their age live longer than the one who asked her. Now, you can say things that are true, but they're not necessarily going to be beneficial. So, question first is, you should never say anything that is not true. So it should be your guide. Think before you speak. T, is it true? Never speak falsehood. Never speak something you are not sure about. You are better to say nothing than to be caught manufacturing something. Secondly, H, is it helpful? Is it helpful? Is it helpful in the argument to just blurt out something that is true because you're angry? No. We can say things that are true that are very damaging. Is it helpful? Is it going to help the situation I'm in? Is it going to help diffuse? Is it going to help encourage? Is it going to help direct this in a good way? Is it going to help? So T, is it true? H, is it helpful? I, is it inspiring? Is it encouraging? Is it uplifting? Is it building? Does it move something forward in a good way? Is it inspiring? Is it light or is it dark? Is it life or is it death? James really goes into the power of the tongue, and we will go into it more in the next week and a bit. James, one of his major topics is the tongue that causes such damage. So to set the stage, to think before we speak, we've got to ask, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? N, is it necessary? Does it need to be said? Sometimes in the heat of something, we think it needs to be said. You know something? You need to hear this. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe we need to back off that one. Does any of this sound familiar to you, or is it just Tim doing Tim's thing? And that's what I'm saying. If we're really going to take a hold of this book, it's going to be transformational. That's what this journey is that we're on, is a journey of transformation. And you're kind of sitting there going, man, there's no way. This is trying. Good, good. I'm glad it's trying. Because we should consider this trying time pure joy. Because as we persevere through it, God is going to lead us to maturity, lacking nothing. So if this is rubbing, if this is right now, even if maybe the person sitting next to you and you keep bumping each other with elbows while you're carefully trying to write, take this on board. Take it on board. Is it necessary? Is this really going to be life-giving? Is this really going to be a gift? Is this going to be good? And lastly, is it kind? Is it kind? Think before you speak. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? So the encouragement here from James is be quick to listen. Shut down the need to just talk. Shut down the need to just produce the argument. And think. Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? Is it kind? And lastly, take it down a notch. Calm down. Be slow to become angry. Why? Because James goes on to say, because our human anger does not accomplish godliness or godly righteousness. Our human anger tends to just be explosive and responsive and very often destructive. Human anger, whether it comes out in words or in physical action, very rarely does things that build up anything. How many times have you been thanked by someone that you were just so angry with them? Anyone ever come to you and say, man, I just really want to thank you that you were so wonderfully irate with me. Like it was such a beauty to behold. Oh, it was so, oh, I just wanted to stay in that space. It was, oh, ever? No. In fact, when there's anger like that, we're looking for the exit. We want out of there. It never accomplishes godliness and righteousness, human anger. Be slow to become angry. Proverbs 15:18 says this, a hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. The one who is patient, who waits. We think of patience as just waiting, don't we? So be quiet, be patient. Patience is not loud, it's not verbose. Impatience is the one in the driveway beeping the horn. Patience is just in the car, and when the person gets in, you just smile. Patience is the one that just doesn't have to say, are you kidding me? Come on, would we? They're the one who just noticed the time and then just wait. It's patience. The patient one calms a quarrel. I was looking at just some psychology, little writings on tips to calm down. One of them, it's a great idea, but it's not very practical. It says, take a warm bath. I don't know if that would go over real well in an argument. Hang on a sec, I'm just going to go take a bath. Maybe it would. Maybe the time to run that bath and get it going and put your bath salts in and your bubbles and, you know, maybe that's going to be helpful. But I think you need something that's a little more actionable straight away, isn't it? A little more actionable. So some of these ones, yeah, Ryan's like, oh man, he's writing that one down. It's a good idea. Tips to calming down. Here's some really simple ones. Take deep breaths. Take deep breaths. Another thing I was reading said, listen to your own breathing. It's funny, whenever I've been a part of emergency situations and you've got paramedics who turn up and people are in a frantic state, and they'll just say to them, just take deep breaths. I'm sure any of you here, nurses, paramedics, doctors, etc., realize that there is a real calming effect of just breathing deep, just feeding your brain with the oxygen it needs that you're not getting when you're just panting and frantic and angry. It's actually, they say that when you're panting and angry and frantic, you're not even thinking clearly because you're not even getting the oxygen you need to the brain to process clearly. And the whole system begins to slow down when you just take deep breaths. Now, I recommend you don't do that particularly out loud. Taking deep breaths to calm down your anger doesn't mean you stand there with folded arms going, it's probably not going to help. Just deep, deep. Just listen. Others say count to 10. Slowly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. No, just slowly. Here's one. Walk away. Now listen, though. Walk away by choice, not as a reaction. When you walk away by choice, you are still in control. Still in control of yourself. It's not in a huff. It's not turning on your heel and stomping out. That's not walking away. Walking away says, you know what, right now this doesn't feel like it's heading anywhere good. And so I think it's going to be better if I just walk away for a minute and we we reassess this later. Or if you're angry about something, remove yourself from what's making you angry. If you're getting angry because of what you're watching on the TV, on the news, turn it off, walk away. It's not worth it. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And this is, if you look at it again in James, it's the context of the trial, of the struggle, of the fist shaking, of the complaining. And James just says, listen, stop. Take it down. Change your focus. Change what you're dwelling on. I haven't slept well recently. There's been a lot on my plate and a lot on my mind. You know what I started doing at night? When I wake up thinking, I start reciting to myself the 23rd Psalm. That has become life to me in recent, months. When I'm so tossing and turning and thinking and I know there's big things on, I just have to start going, Lord, you are my shepherd. I'll have no need of anything. You lead me beside quiet waters. You are the one who leads me in green pastures. It's you who will restore my soul. Oh, and even if I'm facing the valley of the shadow of death, even if death's threatening shadow is cast over me, even if I walk in the darkest space of heart and mind, God, I'm not going to fear evil. For you and your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You just start changing the way your mind is processing. Change what you are focused on. And dwell on the good. Dwell on the good. Thank God for His goodness. Recount His blessings. You know, let me go to a spouse situation. If you are arguing and fighting with your spouse, I guarantee you, you did not fall in love with them because they were such a darn good fighter. True? You fell in love with them for some other part of beauty that captured you. So what about husbands, if in the middle of an argument you start focusing on the beauty of your wife? On what was it that first attracted you to her? Wives, what was it about your husbands? What was it that first attracted you to them? Wouldn't it be interesting if you began to think about that and then before you know it, you just plant a kiss right on them? Man, I was just remembering how beautiful you were. Gotta be careful. Dwell on the good. And then James says this, humbly accept the word planted in our hearts, because it has the power to save our soul. Don't just listen to it. Ready? Put it into practice. Don't neglect it. Don't walk away and forget it. You may not understand the blessing, the maturing process while we're in the midst of it. But that's why the writer of Proverbs again said this, trust the Lord with all your heart. And don't just lean on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. The themes of the Scriptures just circle around and around and echo and reverberate, and if we will listen to them, they become transformational to us. So this is how we're going to finish. Going to stand together, and we're going to bring that slide up, if you would, on the one just before this, on the five keys of think. Here's homework. Let's jump on our feet. Let's change our position for a minute. Sometimes when we just physically change our position, it changes what we're thinking. So the three things that James talks about here is, first, be quick to what? Listen. Be slow to speak. And be slow to become angry. So you can colloquialize it if you'd like to. Listen up. Zip it up. I was going to use another one, but I thought that might be too colloquial. Listen up. Zip it up and calm down. And before we begin to speak, think. Let's say it together. Think before you speak. T, is it true? H, is it helpful? I, is it inspiring? N, is it necessary? And K, is it kind? Oh, Father, would you help us? Would you please enable us to be transformed by your word at work in us? Lord, as we do read through James and apply it, let us not just be listeners to the word who do nothing about what it says, but we'd take it on board. And we would allow its work to be complete in us, that we would persevere under the trial even of shaping, knowing that as we persevere, we will be brought to the fullness of maturity and your work will be accomplished in us. Lord, we know that the enemy comes only to kill, to steal and destroy, but Jesus, you came that we might have life and have it abundantly. So may we walk in that life today. To the glory of your name, Jesus. Amen.